Om Shanti, and good morning. It's really very lovely to see all of Baba's children arriving from all corners of the world. And as far as I'm aware, there will be about 2,000 of us coming by the time Baba's meeting happens. And these days from so many countries. During the peace of mind, Sister Genty was telling us that Baba has service in 104 countries now. It's wonderful, isn't it? Each time we come, the number is going up. And I think that for a Brahman, the year is framed by our visit to Madhavan. Is that right? Thank you. I got a very confident yes from somebody. And how much love do we have for Madhavan? And I can remember in the early days when I used to come in the late 70s, Baba often used to mention that we would come to Madhavan, meet Baba. We'd go back to our own place for one reason, just to save money to come back again. That was what the year was about. And I can even remember, actually, just when I sat down, I was remembering once a group of us, in those days we used to come, once a few times I came from Bombay and Delhi by bus. I would suggest you don't do that in the future. 22-hour bus ride. But I can remember once we came by train, and second-class train, and you know, in those days we would arrive after, it seemed like almost a day, and we were filthy dirty. I mean, really, you can't imagine, and you know, we were filthy dirty. And we arrived about 10 p.m. and Baba was there. And so they immediately said, oh, go and say hello to Baba first. And so it looked like we had been all having a football match, you know. And we were paraded along the stage in front of Baba. And yet what did Baba see? Baba only sees the shining soul. It was really wonderful. Oh, there's no translation. Is there no one in the Russian? No. Someone's just gone in there, so... It's is that okay? You can hear? Okay. Is Spanish working? Is Portuguese working? Is Thai working? Is there anyone not getting translation at all? I was remembering also that in those early days, Baba used to tell us that he was home, and we all feel Madhavan is our home, and our own countries was the office. Do you remember that? And someone once said to Baba, Baba, how come we work 11 and a half months of the year in the office and only, and only 2 weeks in the home? Which I think is a very good question. But anyway, it's so lovely to come. But I think that, you know, when we do come to Madhavan, you know, some of us are coming for the first time and some of us are coming for, you know, many, many times. But all of us live most of the year in our center with just a few of Baba's children. In many of the centers around the world, we're just a handful. Sometimes there's, you know, 100 or so, but most of the centers are quite small. And I don't know whether you find it, but I think some of Baba's children, when we suddenly come into this huge gathering, how do you feel? Yes, you can see how happy Victoria's face is. But sometimes also we can be so intoxicated to be in this unlimited family, but we can also feel a bit lost. You know, we can feel a little bit lost being in such a huge gathering. amongst so many powerful souls, you know, souls with so many qualities and abilities. And sometimes maybe a few thoughts start to come in my mind, well, who am I, you know? Where do I belong? Where do I fit in? And really, what is my part? Because I think this is a question which many of Baba's children ask at some point in their Brahman life. What is my part? What is my role? And this year we had peace of mind just before all the BKs began to arrive. And Dedi Janki often mentions three questions. And she was telling the guests that there's three important questions in life. One is, who am I? And we all know that that's like a lifelong study. It's a lifelong study. And to me, a true Brahman is one who every day digs deeper into the awareness of the self, removing the layers, the deception of body consciousness, to have that intrinsic experience of my eternal reality as a soul. The second question, whom do I belong to? And we know that also, just like the journey in knowing the self, that in a sense, Brahman life is constantly coming closer to Baba, removing the veils of misunderstanding created by bhakti so that I have that deep relationship with Baba. But the third question she often mentions is, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? It's like, okay, I know who I am, I know who I belong to, but now, what do I need to do in my life? It's like, what is my part? Perhaps in the current lingo, what is my purpose as a BK? And sometimes I think the first two questions are clear. We know where we stand. Even if I am on the journey, I still know that I'm on the journey to be a soul, the journey to know Baba. But sometimes exactly what is my part, what do I need to do, we can feel a little bit confused about that. We're not sure where I stand with that. And I even have a feeling sometimes that when I really know who I am and I know Baba, the expression of self-awareness and my relationship with Baba becomes my part in the drama. In a sense, that's really what my part does become. But one of the aspects of knowledge which really fascinates me and has always, I've found, quite extraordinary is one aspect of wisdom about the self, and that is that the whole part is recorded in the soul. Isn't that a wonder that as we sit at this moment in time, the whole part, right back to the beginning of the Golden Age, and the part right up to the time I returned to Paramdham, is all scored in my subconscious. It's like every year, every day, every millisecond, every thought, every behavior, and every action is actually recorded in the soul, past and future. And I remember once Brother Jagdish, who's our wonderful brother who wrote so many books and was in a way a pioneer in a lot of thinking and churning about Baba's knowledge. He gave an analogy which really helped me, and he said that the soul was like a long playing record. Who remembers the old long playing records? You seems like ancient history now, and he said that like on a long playing record, you know, the whole record is there. And yet, wherever the needle touches the record, the needle of time, that emerges the part. So the whole part is there, the needle, time is emerging my part, which I'm beginning to play. And as he said once, that sometimes at the end of the cycle, the soul has experienced a lot of sorrow. You know, the needle plays the last few parts of a long, long record, and we don't like the feeling of the last moment, so then we say, I don't like the whole story, you know? But in fact, it's really a wonder that how the soul has the whole part latent and time is emerging my part at each moment. And this brings up another question for me, is that if this part is eternal, it's like each moment, today, is an eternal part in my story, in my karmic story. Am I enjoying it? It's a big question, isn't it? Am I enjoying the part I'm playing? Or am I constantly fighting my part, resisting my part, confused about my part, comparing my part, or am I just really enjoying what I do? And really when you think about it, and many times Baba does say that of all the virtues, the crown jewel of all virtues is contentment. When you really think that if every scene that emerges in my part, I have the wisdom, the purity, the truth in my intellect really just to go with it, enjoy it, realizing it's eternal. And if I don't like it this time, I'm not going to like it next time. It's a simple thing, but actually it's the thing which has often been in my mind. And, you know, sometimes I think in a way contentment is really the harmony of my relationship with myself, my relationship with Baba, and my acceptance of my part in drama. Because I think it's a very deep thing to really have that realization and begin to accept my part. Because when we are mixing with so many powerful souls, so many loving souls, so many pure souls, the human character is sometimes just to feel a little bit inferior or compare myself. And I can remember at one point in my Brahman life when these things emerged in me, I remember thinking that if I do feel a bit jealous of somebody, if I do feel a bit envious of somebody, if I'm comparing myself or I'm competitive, what does that mean? What is it a sign of? Ultimately, it's a sign that I don't really know and accept my own part in drama. If I've really understood my part, my specialty, my uniqueness, and I accept it, I don't think these feelings will emerge. And yet, virtually all of us will go through these feelings. I once remember, it's amazing what sticks in the mind. And I was only mentioning this to someone the other day, that I can remember Dadi Prakashmani, she went on a world tour in 1977. And she went to every center outside of India. And it was like a 3-month tour, and Australia was her last stop. I can remember. And I even remember a class she gave to us. And she was saying that the Ramayana is the story of two vices, really, and how these two vices absolutely bring the human soul down. The first was jealousy. And she was really saying that jealousy is the seed of all the other vices in many ways. And we know how they have vices get on very well. They've got a very intimate relationship with each other. But the other one was imagination. Interesting, isn't it? Imagination, maybe another word in English you could use is paranoia, where my impurity manifests by reading into situations, reading into people, reading into people's motives, things which aren't there. You know, I jump to a conclusion, I imagine stuff. It's actually a vice which can really influence the soul. And so it's like, you know, I think we're on the journey to know who I am. I have my relationship with Baba, but actually, what is my part? What is my part in the drama? And what was the message we heard this morning? It was lovely, wasn't it? That of all the treasures in this life, what's the most special treasure? What did Baba say today? He does change his mind occasionally. Have you noticed? What was today? I think it was the confluence age, wasn't it? Yeah, and I think that that is something which I often think about, because last few years Baba's been talking to us a lot about the importance of time. And in my view of the whole cycle, when I look at the whole part, the confluence age is the time of magic. It's the time when God will be revealed and his angels will step into the world. It's remembered in every culture. And so it's something which happened. And sometimes I think that the best part of the whole cycle is still to come. I believe that. It's like, isn't it amazing? We probably had 4,900, and I won't say how many other years because there's so much speculation. But the best time is still to come because the wonders will be seen. And I think that it's like Bubba's playing his part perfectly, of course. Drama's playing its part. Time is playing its part. But am I playing my part accurately too? Have I understood where I'm seated in this wonderful interplay of God, souls, and matter? Because I think it is such an important form. Sometimes we think soul consciousness is just to know the soul, but I actually have to know what type of soul I am and how to play my part according to my specialties. One of the things which has really helped me in my Brahman life is at one point, I didn't know what you're like, but I think at first we try to be everything. Sometimes you try to, you know, be everything to everyone and do everything. But I found that one important thing for me was to realize what I can do okay and what I can't do okay. I think that's an incredibly important thing to learn about myself because others in the family will do that. And it's like Baba always says that every single child has a particular specialty. And if I say, Baba, I'm not sure what mine is, it's like, have I really understood the knowledge deeply and the role that Baba wants me to play? Because one of the things, understanding this extraordinary thing that the soul has its whole part in its memory track, is that when we look at the world and we see so much suffering in the world, we see so much anxiety, people, you know, it's such a level of stress and depression and all the words, the buzzwords we hear these days. There's so many reasons for it. But I often feel that the real reason is that almost psychically the soul feels there's not much future. You know, it can feel that there's no real future. You know, when they do surveys of young people in the world, sometimes in some countries up to 80-90% of young people see no future. Because it's almost we tune into the part. You know, you get a sense. And this is why I feel there's so much depression, because we can't see any future. But we are Brahmins. We have our part in our memory track. And our part is to step onto the world stage as an angel and a bestower. And many times I think about this because I wonder whether I really deeply in my heart identify with that part or whether I feel it's just a nice story that Baba is telling us. Because it sounds beautiful. We like it, but do I deeply believe I am one of those? Or do I feel sometimes, or maybe it'll be, you know, the daddies and the dadders and all those sort of people, but, you know, I might be one of those sort of in the background or whatever. Because I think Baba, sometimes I think Avyat Bap Dada, he's always trying to get us to step into our part. You know, Baba's invoking us. Drama is invoking us, time is invoking us. Am I ready to step into that part of such a bestower, of such an angel? Because sometimes my feeling is the greatest challenge for Baba's children is to accept our greatness. You know? It really is. Sometimes we, you know, feel that humility is say, well, I'm not there. But actually, rejecting in a sense what Baba is telling us is in a sense a subtle form of ego, but on the inferiority side too. Because Baba's telling us that is our part. And I think sometimes it is our challenge to accept and really have the courage to let go and really step into my part. Because, you know, sometimes I think that what has the most powerful influence on me in my life? Is it God's vision? Is it the world's vision? Is it others' vision? Or is it the vision on myself? You know, the world will look at you and make a lot of judgments about you. People will look at you too and box you. Others will look at you and box you. And I look at myself, often we limit ourselves. We are so habituated in the second half of the cycle to limit myself. Body consciousness is all about limitation. It's putting myself in this small sort of contained view of who I am. Soul consciousness is breaking out of the box and actually stepping into the part, that unlimited part, and accepting God's vision. Sometimes I feel this whole journey is letting go the limitation of my own vision and having the courage to step into God's light and accept God's vision on myself. And in a way, that's the story of the yajna. If you really look at the yajna when they began, like Daddy Jenki, who sat in front of us this morning in such an unbelievable shining light of self-esteem, and so, isn't she? She's just remarkable. Nothing can face her. Nothing is fearful. Nothing creates fear. How? I think it's just the courage to step into Baba's vision and step out of my own limitation and accept the part that God wants to give me, rather than always seeing the limitation and putting limitation on myself, because it's such a deep habit to do that. And, you know, sometimes I have the thought that, you know, on this journey into, you know, understanding, accepting and even loving my part, it is quite a long journey. And one of the beautiful things I took from last season was in the last Muli, or the second last Muli, when Baba said something. You know how Baba says something so simply, which just hits you, penetrates deeply? That's Baba's beauty. He can frame something so simple and make it so profoundly deep. And what Baba said was that this year, make a plan of self-progress by surrendering the eye of arrogance and the eye of disheartenment, and emerge the eye of soul consciousness. Do you remember Baba saying that? And I found that it just immediately clicked with me what was, you know, what Baba was really talking about. And a few questions came in my mind, and I really asked myself, which eye has more influence inside my head? It's a good question, actually, because they all have their own personality. They all have their own personality. Does the eye of soul consciousness have the most powerful influence on me? And maybe I've let go a lot of the gross forms of the eye of arrogance and disheartenment, but how much are the subtle forms really influencing my part, so I can't really dance to the tune of my eternal, true, authentic self? And when I began to think about them, you know, the eye of arrogance is like the eye of superiority. This is the eye that whispers in your ear, not much actually. I think the eye of inferiority is a much stronger influence, but the eye of superiority sometimes feels I'm better than others, I know more than others. My opinion is the right one. My perception of things is the right perception. How deep is that? That's been one of my churnings all year this year. Is that Baba's main way of defining arrogance of last season that I could see was that I really feel that the way I see things, the way I understand you, the way I see the drama is the right way. You know, how deep is that to feel? And yet all of us look through the filter of my past karmic story and my own experience. It's such a deep thing. But actually we understand these eyes by feelings. And when I'm under the influence of the eye of arrogance, I feel insulted. I feel disrespected. I don't feel I'm valued. Sometimes I just always have a permanent feeling that others don't value me. I am sure I'm seeing reality. And yet, it's my perception of reality because I'm under the influence of the eye of arrogance. Sometimes I feel hurt. Sometimes I feel revengeful feelings. I want to, you know, pay back somebody, whatever. Because it's a very subtle influence on my intellect. I remember when I first started in my early spiritual childhood, I started with a friend of mine in London, and you know, there was a handful of students, and I can remember one day, you know, as Daddy does, Daddy will pick out somebody, you know how she does, and she praises them and says, and one day in the class, she picked out my friend, and she was praising him a lot, and a few thoughts started to come in my mind, oh, she doesn't value me, you know? You know how strangely the mind works in that way? She never said that at all. But the eye of arrogance is so deceptive that these thoughts start to come in the mind. And you know, I've even find sometimes the intellect says, no, that's wrong. And yet the feelings are still there. You know how sometimes that happens. And I can remember that, you know, quite strongly. And this eye of arrogance craves praise, it craves attention. You know, it really craves a lot of things. But actually, the eye of arrogance is only a front. It's actually a cover for the true impure form of I, which is the eye of disheartenment. And the eye of disheartenment is like the eye of inferiority. And Baba was saying, you know, you've got the eye of arrogance on one hand, the eye of disheartenment on the other hand. We oscillate, but mostly we sit really, I think, in the eye of disheartenment. And when I'm under both influences, how can I really know who I am or what I'm supposed to do? Because I'm under an experience of deception at that time. And this eye of disheartenment will tell me that I'm no good, I'm not good enough, others are better than me, others don't like me, others don't love me. How many things can it whisper in my ear in subtle or gross forms? But what are the feelings? Because the feelings really tell me. Sometimes there's the feelings of a little bit of hopelessness, a little bit of disheartenment, maybe a lot, feelings of unworthy, feelings of, you know, being weak, I'm weak, feelings of inferiority. These are the feelings which sometimes I have a feeling we've nurtured in the soul for such a long time. This is why they're so strong. You know, sometimes I mention that I have the image, I love to look at the soul's journey through the cycle. I think it helps to understand who I am now too. And sometimes I feel at the beginning of the Copper Age, you know, all of us in this room, every single one of us, we're the ones who every morning we get out of bed, stagger down to the temple or the church, you know. We're the ones every life, at some point we begin to search for our truth, you know. And we go into the mosques or the synagogues, the temples, the churches, whatever, and just think, you know, God, you're so high, you're so pure, you're so great, or the deity, and I'm so low, I'm so impure, I'm so weak. Just think if we've reinforced that so deeply, just so deeply we've reinforced that in the soul. Is it any wonder that the soul comes at the end of the cycle with such a strong form of the eye of disheartenment? But Baba asked us to make a plan to deal with this year. And because the effect of the eye of disheartenment is that becomes my reality. That's how I see myself. That's how I see others. That's how I see my part in the drama. And that's why sometimes I feel I don't think my part's a very good part. But the middle path is like the eye of soul consciousness. You've got the eye of arrogance, the eye of disheartenment. And that's that beautiful point. And the more I sort of practice soul consciousness, the more I'm thinking of it in these days is it's like coming home. You know, I really feel it's coming home to a place in myself where I belong. You know that lovely feeling where you feel so easy? What did Baba say about Dadiji this morning, that she's loved because of her easiness? You know, when you feel so easy, you feel so relaxed, so accepting of who I am. It's a wonderful feeling when I feel so in that beautiful space. And I'm away really from the noise of my mind and the noise of my past. And I've stepped away from the pull of my ego on both sides and all the pressure I put on myself. I'm just in that wonderful place where I really feel I belong. And I think that this was the homework Baba gave us this year, in a way to shed the extremes of the I and sit in this I, because I think only when I'm truly soul-conscious can my part emerge. Otherwise, I'm always wondering. Sometimes I feel good about it, sometimes I don't feel good about it at all. And so I'm always in this oscillation between high and low. And then we say, okay, Baba, no problem. I'm going to really practice soul-consciousness. And this is my own experience, and I've heard many others say that you really start to practice, you know, I'm a tiny point of light, I'm a tiny, tiny, tiny point of light, you know, and you're a point of light, and you know, which we have to do, you know, and sometimes we invest so much effort in the practice of soul consciousness, which is really the fundamental practice, first practice of this life. I always come back to this practice. I find I do it more and more. And yet we invest so much energy, and yet we really don't feel I get the results I want. Who's had that experience? Who's had that experience? Yeah. I think it's very common. And you know one of the reasons? I think it's because we actually practice to be a soul, but we still hold on to the old images of myself. So on this one hand, I still sort of see myself as the I, which is the arrogant I and the disheartened I. And so when I hold on to that sense of self, I can't really progress because I'm addicted to this old images of myself. And it's one of the things to do in Madhaman, I feel, to really sit quietly with myself and really fathom the depths of what soul consciousness means. And I have to really step out of those two I's and establish that middle path, the eye of soul consciousness, in a really true way. Because when I begin to really establish that, I feel it's easier to love myself. Because ultimately, what's the destination? The destination is to be the embodiment of love. The destination is to love everyone, but I can only do it when I love myself. And you know, what I feel is that many times, we all know this, we're all on this journey of feeling better about who I am, but sometimes we don't really progress like we do want to, because I'm still trying to love those two eyes that aren't lovable. They're not lovable. We try to love them, we try to force myself to feel good, but I can't. Actually, it's only the middle path, the soul-conscious eye, that is really lovable. And when I really understand that, I think it really helps me begin to realize that, you know, to emerge my true part, I've really got to practice that soul consciousness and love myself as a soul without all the trappings, because we've been addicted to trying to love myself because I do this well, because I'm like this, because of some reason, rather, you know, of what I do, rather than who I am. And I if I look at some of Baba's instrumental souls, there's two specialties I notice in a lot of the instrumental souls, a lot of the seniors. And you know, we can have all sorts of sanskaras, but you know, there's two specialties that they seem to have. One is they have all relationships with one Baba. I feel that's the method to win Baba's trust. Because Baba knows when I have all relationships with one, then I'm not influenced so much by others. And it's like God's influence is on me. But the second one is to become an instrument, to really feel I'm an instrument. Because when I really feel it's God's working with me, God working through me, sorry, not with me, but God working through me, not just as an intellectual belief, and that's a journey in itself, but I really feel it. It's almost like I sidestep my own sanskaras, my own karmic story. No matter what they are, when I really feel I'm an instrument and I have all relationships with one, it's like Baba can really work on the soul. And when Baba can work on the soul, it seems like the part begins to emerge in me as it really should. Because sometimes I think Baba's children, we come into Brahman life, oh, this is my family, this is where I belong. And then when I settle into service, I start to think, well, what's my role? And then we think, who's going to give me a role? In my experience, that's not the way of the Brahman world. It emerges. It's almost like, according to my actions, my specialties, I create my own part with Baba's guidance and Baba's help. I feel sometimes if I try to create my role too hard, it just doesn't work. What I have to do is be in the right consciousness, have all relationships with one, really feel I'm an instrument. It's like I prepare myself, and then it's like Baba and the drama can emerge the role, what I need to do, and to play my part in an accurate way. So I don't actually have to think too much about it. It will just come as it really should. And I think that when I begin to, understand these things, I think I relax a little bit rather than sometimes worrying, what do I need to do? What's my role in service? And then as soon as those thoughts begin to emerge, all the comparisons and a lot of stuff emerges in my relationships with others too, because I sort of looking around because I see what they're doing and then I wonder what I'm doing. And if I'm not seated on that, that seat of self-respect, I sometimes think, oh gosh, I better do like you, and oh, I better do like you, and you're not really sure where you are. And it can be an uncomfortable feeling. Because I think that it is a journey. Everything in this life is a learning. And we need great, great patience. In the Peace of Mind retreat, I was sharing with the guests that one thing I always remember, Daddy Jenki mentioning early in my Brahman life, there's three things you need in Brahman life. The first is patience. The second is patience. And guess what the third might be? More patience. Is it true? It's really true, isn't it? How much patience do you need with yourself? And if you're like me, sometimes who wants to just get there straight away, who's that type? I just want to, I finished the 7-day course, Baba, I want to be an angel on day 8. Perfect. I sometimes remember, when I started in Gyan, it was 1975, and some of you may have heard this story, that some of the pictures, there's those wonderful big old pictures that they produced of the cycle, Lakshmi Narayan and so on. One of them said on the bottom, do you remember, there will be the world destruction in 1976? And I can really, I read that, and that wasn't Baba who said that, by the way, that was some BK who put it there. And I remember reading that and thinking, I've got 8 months to become perfect, no problem. No problem. And 30 years later, we're still working at it. But it's wonderful, and we wouldn't trade such a life for anything. But, before Gyan, we often get my self-respect from what I do. And sometimes we've carved out a little niche in our life, which we feel quite comfortable. Some of us felt secure within my professional, my family, because we sort of knew the boundaries. It was a temporary part, but it was a part that I knew. And, I can remember when I started a few of my sanskars. One of them was to try to please other people. That sanskar where you're happy with your part if others are happy with your part. You know that? Where you live your life through the eyes of other people. I think it's a part of life today. It's like we need others' approval to feel good about who I am. Baba really quickly breaks that down. And, different things like that. But when we come to Baba, it's just so wonderful. And, we sit in front of Baba's vision. And Baba takes us to a new level. He says, child, you're the child of last Kalpa. You're one of the special jewels who'll become the angel to reveal God to the world. And it's just music to our ears, isn't it? It's a wonder. It's just such a beautiful thing to hear. And then I step onto the path to really move in that direction. And so that this, you know, it's like my intellect believes that's my part, but sometimes my feelings don't, you know. My feelings still keep me stuck somewhere. And I can remember, I think when I began to, and many of us have maybe been through this, that sometimes it's like the first step is I try to live up to an image, you know. Baba gives this image, child, you must be always sweet, always tolerant, always loving, always pure, never get angry, etc., etc., etc. And we aim for that, of course, and yet sometimes on the surface I start to do everything right. I look the part, I wear my white clothes, I've got my nice badge on, I go to the class, I follow the systems and customs, but inside there's a lot of upheaval going on because I feel, you know, Baba's saying all these things and I'm not there, you know. And I think one of the great wisdoms that we need initially in my part is to realize I'm a work in progress, you know, to accept my level where I'm at now and yet not to lose the high aim, to keep the aim but to accept where I'm going. I think that takes quite a bit of wisdom, quite frankly, because it's like Baba talks about perfection. That's my aim. But I've also almost got to accept my part at the level I'm at now, but still make effort. It's a tricky thing, isn't it? But I can't compromise the aim and yet at the same time begin to feel accepting of where I am. I think it's a very important thing. And then as we go further, as I'm on this journey to really trying to find my true authentic part, what can happen is that Baba talks about total unadulterated purity. That's where I've got to be. And sometimes my thoughts and my feelings aren't like that in whatever level. And it's, to me, the sign of a knowledgeful soul who understands this. Because what kicks in is this self-rejection, you know? When I hear Baba talking about this and I see where I'm at sometimes, I begin to have these powerful negative thoughts against myself. All I need is love. But it's almost like the eye of arrogance kicks in against myself this time and starts to say, you're no good, you're not pure. You know that voice inside my head? It's almost like the voice of self-rejection. And I feel, once again, the step to moving towards my authentic part, I've got to learn to deal with this. A knowledgeful soul will realize Baba has, you know, often I think, and even Baba was talking about Maya this morning, that Baba often says to children, storms will come. He never says storms might come. Has anyone ever heard in Bali where he says storms might come? They will come. They're going to come. But I don't think the storm is so important. It's how I react to the storm. And if I fall into the old process of self-rejection, I remain weak. I remain weak and I'm still at the two extremes of the eyes once again. And I can't really sit in the middle path to really know and experience who I really am. I've got to learn to be gentle, to be kind, to be understanding. A Gyani soul will observe the impurity and not feel bad about it. A Gyani soul will observe it, maybe there, and actually just observing it becomes less and less. Now, sometimes I've had the thought, all of us will experience the five vices. That's, every human soul has the five vices. There's not one that doesn't except for the angel, Brahma, and maybe one or two others, or a few others. They will come to all of us. But it's the second wave, I often feel, which does the damage. That's the reaction to the first wave of vices. And the second wave is the guilt, the shame, the fear, you know? The second wave, that's what really weakens me. And so, it's like, and then I work through that, I start to accept myself more. As I do, I'm getting more clarity about who I am and my part. And I start to say, well, what is my role in drama? And it's one thing I really took time to learn, actually, because What I realized, one of the deepest sanskaras in the soul is this sanskar of getting all my sense of self from what I do rather than who I am. It's so deep. You know, I think we come to Baba, and it's such a relief to sort of let go my sense of limited identity based on my family, my profession. And it's such a relief when we feel so light and free. And yet what happens is sometimes later in Brahman life we begin to rebuild that identity within service and within the family in a subtle way. It's almost like maybe a subtle form of trying to get my sense of self from what I do. You know, I do an action, I receive a result. This is the attainment of the second half of the Kalpa. Doing creates the being. Whereas Baba's way is first be, we wake up in the morning, we're being in a state of spirituality, and then all my actions come out of that doing. And this is really, I think, Baba's method to begin to change us. And that's what I think. The more I think about my part, the more I think about what I, you know, have to do on a physical level, actually, to emerge my true part, it's actually I have to be. I have to be in that state close to Baba to be soul conscious. And as we're saying, I think what Baba really wants me to do emerges. And I feel that if, how do I know that it's still right? I do feel that when there's contentment or happiness, I'm on the right track. If I'm not, I'm still perhaps haven't reached that point where I'm really performing in the, you know, the part that Baba really wants me to perform. And sometimes I think that, you know, that habit to be sustained by what I do is such a deep thing, and we have to come to terms with that. And I found for myself, when I first started service, there was so, you know, almost you touched and it went to gold, you know, it was so easy. Everything happened so easily, it was fantastic. And then I experienced the opposite. No matter what you touched, it just went, nothing worked for a while. And I really realized it was such a healthy lesson to learn because, you know, you begin to realize that it's actually Baba's task, Baba is doing, and we're just the instruments. And if I'm still receiving my self-respect from the results of service and what I do, once again, that will take me back into the eyes, the extreme eyes of arrogance and disheartenment, and I'll keep fluctuating between those two. And even knowing my own capacity, what I can do, because living in this family and coming in touch with so many powerful souls, some of them who seem to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go to bed at 11 p.m., go, go, go all day, here, there, you know, with a smile on their face. It's just, and you think, gosh, you know, how can I do that? What I've really got to do is have the self-respect of where I'm at and accept myself at that point, know my own capacity, and know I can increase my capacity, because it's like I can increase the quality of my part maybe as I go on, but I've got to work with where I'm at the moment and move with that. Because as I was saying, a great benefit for me was to learn the things which I can't do well either. I think that's a really wonderful realization, because often some stress comes from trying to do things I'm not good at. But when I'm really sitting in my state of soul consciousness, when I'm sitting with Baba, I seem to feel very comfortable with the things I do well, and I'm very comfortable with the things that others do well too. And I don't feel envious or jealous in any way, because I really believe that what will bring me that beautiful state of contentment where I really accept the part of everybody, where I just enjoy the part, the variety part, good, bad, indifferent, whatever, is when I accept my part. If I find it hard to accept what others are doing or how they're behaving, I think the roots of it are really a lot to do with me, you know, how I'm going and how I'm behaving. And so I think that, you know, in this journey, at different points, I'm practicing soul consciousness, I'm with Baba, but sometimes I feel I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to be doing or whether I'm supposed to be playing the right part. I don't think it's about doing a particular service or action. It will emerge, And if it's the right thing, it just all happens in an automatic way. I feel what Baba wants us to be in that state of being, be in the right consciousness, and then the right part of last cycle will really emerge. And I just wonder, you know, with myself, just seeing, you know, time is moving so fast, Baba mentioning it many times last season, whether we feel ready to take a bit of a high step. You know when you go along and we listen to Baba and Baba talking on such a high level, I think actually it's almost like seeing the part in my soul, can I just step into that part? I really believe it's possible to do. Have the humility to accept God's vision on me and just step into the role of Last Kalpa. Because really, the world is waiting for us to do that. And, you know, I think that when I do, what I find when I'm on track on my part, you feel really content, you feel really comfortable. But when you get off track, there's a sort of an uncomfortable feeling inside. And that's the wisdom of the knowledgeful soul, to bring myself back on track, where I'm really moving in the middle path and, you know, I really learn what is my part in the drama. So, I think there's probably a bit of time for any questions or comments or whatever. Please feel free to... Yes, it's been much easier. We can have a little bit of time for questions, and then we can have some meditation, and then there'll be some lunchtime.
It was what you said about trying to create the sense of self when you're on one side arrogant, and the other side disheartened. And I wondered whether, because these aspects are of cause and effect, I cause this to happen, therefore I feel arrogant, and I cause that to happen, therefore I feel disheartened.
Yeah.
Whether the whole cause and effect thing, which is part of our education and upbringing, is actually body conscious. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that definitely can happen, because we get caught in the cycle of a quality of action that keeps me polarized on those two levels, you know, because body consciousness, another way of saying it, is just a lack of self-respect. And when it's there, the front is this incredible confidence sometimes, you know. It's amazing actually how we're so clever at creating the veneer of confidence, because the eye of arrogance is so skilled to make others feel, wow, I really know who I am and what's going on. But inside, it's pretty fragile, because the eye of disheartenment is sitting behind the veneer, you know, the facade. And so the cause and effect of swinging becomes the way. And Baba said to make a plan. And I found that really interesting, because I can remember many years ago being here and thinking to really create a plan of, you know, self-transformation. Because the thought I often have is that, you know, many times all of us here have a tertiary education, or, you know, many of us have been to university, and we know to pass an exam we have to really have a structured plan to learning. And yet often when we come into Baba's university, I sometimes think that we sort of hope it'll happen, you know? We hope that if I, you know, follow the principles, come to the Mooli a bit, meditate a bit, one day just all my old sanskars just fly out the window and I'm, you know, I'm fine. And maybe that does happen a little bit. But I think Baba actually, his words were make a plan. And I tried that. I tried that some years ago, where what I did was I began to emerge. Yeah, I was just mentioning something I did many years ago was just sort of thinking that I need to actually create a plan. And it was especially in that whole area of self-respect, because I think all of us come at one point in our Brahman life when we realize sometimes how deep that lack of self-respect can be. And it emerges in all sorts of subtle ways. So what I began to do was just see the scenes of drama that emerge those feelings of the eye of arrogance or the eye of disheartenment. You know how sometimes it's personalities, sometimes it's situations, sometimes it's, you know, speaking in front of people, performing, doing, you know, the things that can sometimes emerge, different feelings. And just simply trying to practice a different response. That's simple. So rather than as soon as that person emerges, that personality or that situation, I just lock into my old response, you know? I just go straight back into the old feelings of weakness or inferiority or whatever it may be. And, you know, so I go through, and then I'm stuck in that cycle of cause and effect that she was talking about. Just begin to apply a soul conscious response or some response based on my relationship with Baba. And what I felt was that you practice once and it's just a little percentage of improvement, 1%. Practice again, 2%, 3%, 5%, 7%. It's just you chip away, and after a while you start to see that you're not a victim of that sanskara. It's like, rather than as soon as the sanskara comes, you bow down. Oh, sanskara, you're so powerful. Please take me over. I'm your obedient servant. That's what we do. It's we just give in that quickly to some feelings. And yet, if I respond with a knowledgeful thing, and it will take time, but you chip away. And when we chip away at some of those deep sanskaras, I remember feeling that we change all our habits when we come in Gyan. We change a lot of our soft sanskars, you know, the things which are of the last few lives, but some of those deeply etched ones, they seem to sit in the soul. And a lot has changed, but when I can chip away at those deep sanskars that have been etched in the soul, that's when a lot of confidence really, I think, really begins to emerge that I can change. And I get out of the extremes of the cycle of cause and effect. You know, and I really start to emerge a more soul-conscious response to things. I mean, it takes time, doesn't it? Imagine we get to a point where really, you know, we don't, even if someone insults me, I don't feel it at all. That's what Baba's saying. I found that amazing a few years ago. Baba was saying that if someone insults you, if they do insult you but you feel it, it's still your problem. What they did was wrong, but my response was also wrong, you know? We've got to become so soul conscious that all the little feelings and sensitivities in this way of the oscillation from, you know, the arrogance of disheartenment, all the extremes are removed, and I sit in that beautiful point in the middle with Baba Ware. But it's practice and it's patience. But got to move in that direction. I don't know whether anyone else wants to ask anything or mention anything. Oh, it's there. When did you arrive, Nev?
Charlie, thanks for those comments. It was when I heard you were speaking on this topic, I thought I'd really love to be here because it has been very germane to my journey of this last 12 months, and a lot of what you said was really very, very helpful for seeing the way forward. But one thing that has puzzled me, and that puzzle came up in my mind again in the light of your comments, something that Sister Genty said to me some time back, that don't let your stage depend on service. Mm. One of these little statements that, you know, rings in the head, and you can see the truth and the value of it, but there's a bit of a lack of clarity in my mind, because sometimes, especially if I'm in one of those stages where, you know, I'm feeling that uncertainty about role and I've moved into that swinging between those two extremes that you spoke of, the two eyes, then the question comes, but surely, you know, our life is service. Look at Daddy, how would her stage be if she didn't have service? You know, that question comes to mind, because she speaks also about how the blessings of the Brahmin family carry her forward and give her energy. So I just haven't quite computed that bit of the story.
Mm. So what do you think, Nev, if we just have a moratorium on service, just stop it for a month and see how we all go? I wonder how we would be. Yeah, I think that's what I was sort of alluding to a little bit on my experience, is that how much I was dependent on the results of doing, you know? I found that's almost one of the most profound sanskaras that is etched in the soul, you know, at the end of the cycle. And not only doing, but I am responsible too. It's such a profoundly deep one. And I think the only way that we start to perhaps separate my stage from service is to experience all the spectrum of service. Because as I was mentioning, I think I've experienced it when it's just magic. You know, and you actually get a high out of the results of service. It's wonderful. But then when nothing works at all, and there's even upheaval in amongst Brahmins or whatever, then if I get a big low out of that, you know. So it's like I'm still performing on the basis of doing rather than being. And that's why I think it's really healthy to go through all the extremes of it, because you start to realize that ultimately what I'm going to take forward is really, you know, my consciousness. And it's, I don't know, I think one of the ways Baba changes me, I've often thought, you know, really how do we deal with subtle ego in this life? And my experience is live in the heart of the family. That will chip away your ego. And that's what it's for. I think Baba's created the family because they will tell me what I'm like. I often feel that, you know, my relationships in the family just become like they are revealing to me my, you know, my stage in a way. They will reveal to me who I am. Because what emerges in me, you know, when I come in contact with so many souls. And also on the field of service, they're very obviously closely connected, the family and service. But if you live in the heart of it, because sometimes it's difficult, we're challenged, and so we say, I'm out of here, I don't want anything to do with this. You know, the most controlling of all behaviours is to withdraw, you know? Often we feel control freaks are the people who are in there trying to make things happen. That can be, but real control is getting upset, saying, okay, I'm going to have nothing to do with this anymore. That's actually a form of still wanting to control the outcome of things. And I think that, you know, when I'm absolutely, you know, able to live in the heart of the family, do service, and remain with all the ups and downs, with all the personalities, with all the things that go on, and yet I remain really even, I think that's when I can say my stage is dependent on my connection with Baba and not on others and on service. But I do think it's quite a long journey, isn't it? And that's why the healthiest thing is to stay in the heart of the family and service, because that's what will change me. And if sometimes some people move away saying, yeah, I don't like it the way it is, I've lost the main opportunity to change myself. Even if I don't withdraw totally, but I just withdraw partially, because, you know, the family and service becomes a constant mirror for myself. And I've often asked myself the question, according to what Nev was just asking, you know, is my happiness just based, you know, can I sit in Amrit Vela and just be totally happy with the foundation of self-realization and knowing Baba? You know, is that the foundation of my happiness, or am I still seeking it from other things? And it's a tricky one, because Baba says, do service, do service, do service, and yet if we become attached to the results of service, it can make us really fluctuate a lot. And that's why the more we do, I think, we become detached. And I remember once we were in Australia many years ago, and Daddy Prakashmani was there, and we did this big program in one of the universities, and we had like some 1,500, 2,000 people for a whole day, and it was a really wonderful event. It was very successful. And afterwards we went back to one of the centres, and everyone was very high. You know, when we do service, we all get a buzz out of it. And Daddy was so sweet, saying, it's wonderful, you did a wonderful job, but if no one came, would have you been this happy? We all went, oh, I don't think so. I don't know, one sister was telling me once in Germany, she had the experience that a long time ago too, that they arranged a big program, and I think they had a big auditorium, and they had a lot of speakers, you know, well-known people. They advertised it. And I think she said something like, there was more people on the stage than in the audience. And immediately we start to have waste thoughts about ourselves, you know. But one of the speakers became a BK. And often I sort of felt from that, we never know Bubba's agenda, do we? When we do things, we don't know Bubba's agenda. But I do feel in time that a little bit of separation from seeking myself value from the results of actions is one deep thing. And I think that's how Bubba builds our life, doesn't he? Wake up in the morning, be in that high stage, and all my actions spring out of that high stage. That's Brahman life. First be, and then do. And when I'm content being, I'm not so attached to the outcome of actions. If things don't work out, I'm not as upset as I can be otherwise. So shall we just finish with a few minutes of meditation?